Welcome to the Pack Mentality Podcast. I'm Matt Banwart. My wife, Caitlin, and I own Red Wolf CrossFit in Huntington Beach, California. And we started this podcast with one goal in mind, and that was to make fitness education accessible, engaging, and effective for everyone. Today, Caitlin and I are going to be talking about abs and how to sculpt them in 60 days, and we're going to be backing this up with a science-based approach. So one of the big things we're going to be going over is the ideal body fat percentage, some tips and tricks for your diet, supplements, and we're also going to be going over exercises as well. We'll dive into some more details with that as we go along. So Caitlin, welcome to the show.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Welcome back again. I think I know you. Yes. Okay, so let's start with, let's start with the absolute basics. Let's start with understanding body fat percentage and kind of give everyone an introduction to body fat and what is required for visible abs.
Sure. So body fat percentage is just an indicator of, I guess, overall like physical fitness other than just doing body weight alone, because we all know that body composition matters and can, you know, put differences on the scale as far as how much lean mass do you have versus how much body fat mass you have. So there's, you know, different types of fat as well. There's visceral and subcutaneous. And they both kind of impact your health in different ways.
Okay. Yeah. And I'll give everybody some numbers just so that we have something to work with for ranges, for percentages. And for men to start seeing abs, you're actually going to need a percentage anywhere between 10% and 18%, but 18% is really pushing it, and that is if you're like really tall. Mm-hmm. Like torso length really matters for visible abs as well. If you're short and stubby, like you can't really get away with an 18% to 20% body fat and see your abs. So we're really looking at the ideal range being in that 10% to 14% range for men, because as soon as you dip below that 10% range, that's when you're going to start feeling hungry, you're going to be kind of cranky, you're going to be hard dieting, and it's not going to be any fun. Mm-hmm. I've gotten below 10% and it messes with you psychologically, just with how strict you are with what you're eating, and also, the amount of training you're doing, and like, you know, caffeine intake, like you're relying a lot on caffeine for energy, mm-hmm. Cause your caloric intake is so low.
Yeah.
And for ladies, the ideal body fat percentage can be anywhere between 14% to 28%. But again, that 20% range is very rare. Again, like you are super lanky, you are tall, you have a long torso, and we could see your abs at 28%.
28%?
28%, but I've never seen anyone.
No.
I've never seen anyone with abs at 28%. I think that has to do with torso length.
Yeah, I would go ahead and say more like 22% would be pushing it.
I agree. And I think the ideal range for the ladies is right in that 16, for like that 14 to 20% range, mm-hmm. would be where visible abs, where it's actually sustainable,
yeah.
as well. Because the same rules apply of everything I just said about the guys when it comes to extreme dieting, your energy levels, and just your mental state, because, you know, you're depending a lot on you know, your nutrition, and that can get overwhelming, because mm-hmm. we're talking, like, when I say hard dieting, what that means is like you are tracking every single calorie, you're
yeah.
tracking like all your grams, you're weighing and measuring, and that is not fun. I've done that, and it's not sustainable.
Yeah, I like how you said about sustainable, right? Because it'd be cool to be a certain body fat percentage, you know, for a while, but again, like, actually maintaining that year after year is very challenging to do. And so that's why we're going to talk about this more, but increasing your muscle mass is actually a better kind of mindset, I think, in the long run, of trying to like gain more muscle mass,
right,
instead of always being super lean, you know. Instead, like, if you have more muscle, you're going to look bigger, and that's kind of where we're going to talk about how like the abs start to pop out more, mm-hmm. When you have more muscle mass just on you.
Yeah. What would you say are some common misconceptions about body fat and abs in general?
That they're super easy to get, number one.
That's true.
The biggest thing that we read is, you know, they're made in the kitchen. In reality, I mean, yes, you know, and your nutrition definitely matters.
Yes.
But at the same time, like I said, I've seen very non-muscular people have abs, and it's just because they're just super lean, you know. They're just,
right,
there's no fat on them, but it's not like they're strong in any way, or like they have, you know, visible six pack or something like that, like popping out. Like those are, I want functional abs as well.
Yeah.
I don't want just ones that look good. I want to actually have like a strong trunk and I'm stable and I'm able to like hold things up.
Yeah. And also it's important to remember that very super lean visible abs, like we're talking like shredded abs, mm-hmm. isn't necessarily healthy.
Yeah, for sure. And I like what you said earlier about how it'll affect your mood and everything. If not, I mean, I can speak from at least the female side, it affects your hormones a lot, you know, and then you're going to have like missed menstrual cycles. And then that definitely will affect your hormones as well. And so, you know, there's a lot of different factors that come into play when you're trying to get really lean and get a certain look or body type.
Right. Before we move on to our next section, what is your body fat percentage? What does it fluctuate?
Well, I'm at the lowest I've ever been in my entire life after three kids, which I think is, you know, I don't know what I was doing beforehand, but I'm currently 12%. Before kids, I was always around 18%, actually. And, you know, I thought I was more in shape before, you know, 6 years ago then. But now looking back, I'm like, wow, actually, I've cut back actually a lot on our food choices and our mm-hmm. diet and our nutrition, and not cut back as far as amount goes, but just types of food we eat. We eat a lot less.
The quality is improved.
Yeah, the quality is improved. Yes. And we, you know, it's a lot more simple now.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I'm 12% currently, and I might fluctuate up into about 14, but I'm pretty much have been 12 to 14% for the last 2 years.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm right in that 10 to 14% range. That's usually where I fluctuate. And that's why I find is the most sustainable for me personally.
Yeah. Same. But what's interesting, isn't it, is that we're almost the same body fat percentage. Mm-hmm. However, you have like a 10 pack and you can see like every single
it's
one.
It's not that good.
Okay. It is. And I, on the other hand,
I appreciate the compliment.
I mean, I have abs, but it's not like six pack looking at all. Like there are days where I'm like, man, like I thought I looked leaner the other day. So some days, I mean, just like anything else, like what matters is your diet and like your water intake. Are you bloated? Like, are you retaining more salt? Like there's just so many things that can change, you know, how you look visibly.
100%. Let's go and move into training for abs, like the specific exercises that I think will be helpful for people to know. So let's kind of begin with an overview of what are some common misconceptions, or what do people currently do for ab training mm-hmm. that necessarily they don't need to be doing?
Yeah. Well, like I said earlier, okay, abs are made in the kitchen as far as nutrition goes, but then we want to talk about how to get bigger abs and make them pop out more. And that requires very specific training. And currently, I think a lot of people think it's going to come in the form of like sit-ups, crunches, you know, knees to chest and whatever, laying on the floor, hanging from a bar, and then like planks or holds.
Yeah, I was going to say planks.
When in reality,
a lot of people think planks are
none of that is going to give you abs. Like at all. I mean, like, don't get me wrong. They're great. Planks are super important to learn how to brace and hold. But if you want abs that are defined and pop out, you're going to have to do a lot more resistance training as far as like flexion and stuff like that.
Yeah. The only thing I would add to that is tempo training.
Yeah. Tempo.
Because a lot of people rush through ab movements thinking that like the more I can get them to burn mm-hmm. that they'll be more visible.
Right.
Like they feel like they're also burning fat around it to reveal it.
Yeah, no, it's time under tension. Like anything else, I think time under tension is super important. Going slower and holding contractions longer are probably the most beneficial. I found that adding bands, so like banded crunches or banded knees to chest, just adding that extra tension allows the body to have that constant like response to it. And then it allows you to feel the contractions a little bit more, and then you put in more effort because there's something to push against.
Yes.
So, and we always talk about this as well, is that like weighted carries are an excellent tool to build trunk and core stability. Mm-hmm. And then of course, I mean, we always talk about squats and deadlifts. Those are the two big, if you want big torso abs, you need to squat and deadlift without a belt on. You don't need that assistance. You actually need to build your trunk up more and get it stronger.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. And yeah, I like what you talked about with carries and squats and deadlifts specifically, because the midline was specifically designed not for flexion. Mm-hmm. So a lot of people think that, you know, abs, you know, you know, they were made for sitting up or bringing my knees up. Well, they are. They're there for that too.
Mm-hmm.
But the main purpose of abs is to stabilize your core for like putting something overhead, carrying something on your back, front rack, like some carrying something in front of you, like a bear hug.
Yeah.
That's what the midline was designed for, at least for human nature, I should say.
And I think it's important to look at people who have like the torso that you want or like the abs that you want and look at what they do for training.
Mm-hmm.
I guarantee you they're not doing a bunch of sit-ups on the ground. They're probably lifting heavy, right? Probably squatting heavy, deadlifting heavy. They're probably doing a lot of heavy carries. And like, if you just look back at people's training, like it just goes to show that those are the things that are going to kind of like put you over the edge and get you to that point where you have, you know, a visible trunk.
Yeah. Yeah. People ask me all the time what I do for abs, and they're like, I don't really do anything. I do CrossFit.
If anything, Matt does the least amount of abs.
I really don't do that much. Yeah. The only time I really do abs is like toes to bar and sit ups when we do them in workouts. And then the rest of it's, you know, carries, squats. But yeah, I've never used a belt.
Yeah.
I've never.
That's the big one.
I've only used a belt in competitions, and that was more for like performance for me. It's where I could actually put up more weight because I was used to not, I would always train without one.
Yeah.
So that way when I did put on a belt, I felt like I was bulletproof.
For sure. And I can attest to that as well. The last squat cycle that we did actually before the 20 rep max, actually during the 20 rep max, we were doing a combination, right? A heavy lift and then the 20. I purposely didn't use a belt every session, like up until the very last set or like if I was really like pushing some weight, but like I would constantly warm up with no belt. And that was not really intentionally trying to get my trunk stronger. I was just trying to get more comfortable without it. But when I did an in-body scan after that cycle, I put on like a pound and a half of muscle mass, and it was all in my trunk.
Mm.
Like, and that's
wow.
it. So
that's really cool.
It just goes to show that, like, yeah, like starting to train with, you know, a different mindset as far as like trying to get your core stronger, and in turn, it did like make my abs, I guess, a little bit more visible because they popped out more.
Yeah. No, that's really cool. I didn't even know that. So thanks for sharing that. And I think one last misconception that I kind of want to debunk before I move on is that, you know, there is no efficacy of relying solely on high repetition exercises.
Mm-hmm.
So for example, like if you do like 1,000 bicycle crunches, like I used to do bicycle crunches all the time before I did CrossFit. And, you know, low resistance exercises and it doesn't necessarily lead to a six pack. I think a lot of people think they need more.
Mm-hmm.
And really it's not, you have to train it almost like in that same rep range that you would train, you know, like presses or dumbbell curls or even squats or RDLs. You have to treat it like in a hypertrophy style in order for your abs to pop.
Yeah, for sure. Like anything progressive overload applies as well to your ab and your core strength.
Progressive overload.
Yeah. And not always going based off of, oh, like I'm really sore the next day. You know, like my abs are really sore. I must have really worked them. I mean, yes and no. You could also be sore in your core just from doing carries. I mean, if you do enough and if you do them heavy enough, you will be sore doing that as well.
Yeah.
So just making sure that you have like that sense of purpose. Like, okay, if you want to work on your abs and your core, then you may need to make sure that those things are firing in, you know, everything you're doing, whether it be specific, you know, floor core exercises or if you're just stabilizing as well.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. Let's go into our recommended ab exercises into more detail on what specifically would you recommend? Like, what are your top two?
Oh, just for myself personally?
Yeah.
God, there's so many.
Just narrow down to like your top two. Like if you could only do two for the rest of your life, what are the two ab exercises you
would do? Go ahead and say number one for sure is hollow hold. You can do hollow hold in a lot of different variations.
Hollow hold's good.
But like, and weighted style, like not just, you know, body weight, weighted style. I have found that like a weighted dead bug or, you know, weighted hollow rocks also are good. Just pretty much anything that puts you in that position, because then it really translates over to more other lifts and areas of exercise. So I really like doing that myself. And then other than that, maybe like I really like toes to bar and GHD sit-ups. Those are probably like my other top two kind of movements that I think apply also to other functional movements that I do myself.
Right.
So those would probably be the ones I'd want to do for the rest of my life.
Okay. Yeah. I'll share my two. I don't really do these too often anymore. Mainly, I agree with you with the toes to bar. I think toes to bar is one of my favorite ones for abs, and I like it because I could do it in a CrossFit setting, mm-hmm. so I don't have to do more abs after, especially yeah. 9 times out of 10, whenever we do toes to bar at our gym, we're doing it with high reps, so mm-hmm. I get enough out of it.
Well, if you're not able to do toes to bar, I would say V-ups then. Like,
V-ups oh are my very gosh, good.
Love V-ups, single leg V-ups.
Yeah, I will say V-ups are very good. If you're not able to physically do that yet, here's the two exercises that I would prescribe for you if I were training you. And that would be, I would give you weighted crunches because mm-hmm. that hits the upper abs specifically. Mm-hmm. And that's something that anyone could do regardless of a fitness level.
Yeah.
So I would just have you set up, put a weight on your chest or have you hold it overhead or a band. And then there need to be some sort of resistance. I don't really do weighted crunches because I prefer other exercises. But again, I'm picking these as if I'm training anyone of any ability level. And then the second one would be some sort of a hanging leg raise at tempo. Mm-hmm. I think that would be very good because then you hit in the upper and the lower abs. That covers almost all my bases when it comes to hypertrophy for the abs.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, one thing we haven't talked about that I guess I could just touch on really quick is actually working on your obliques. Coming back from postpartum 3 times, I've learned after the second one to really focus on the obliques on my third one. And you have to remember the core isn't, or the abs aren't just straight up and down. It's about bringing them together diagonally. And mm-hmm. so that's why the obliques are super important. And, rotation, I think, is one of the least things people do, especially if you have a desk job. You rarely rotate.
Yeah.
Rotation is super important because that's usually how somebody hurts their back is they're rotating quickly to pick something up.
Yeah.
And then right there, their torso is not used to rotation.
Right.
So I really find that working on your obliques by doing rotational things or just thinking about bringing your abs together diagonally, that's like the best way I can describe it.
Interesting.
That's a way to tighten up your core and bring them together. And then I find that, especially in women, the first abs you'll see are going to be your obliques. It's going to be the sides. Like, that's kind of where it starts to tighten up. And then from there, you'll see the upper abs first. And then everybody knows that the lower abs are the hardest ones to see.
Very, very difficult. I agree with you on that one. And just kind of piggybacking off what you just said, just to kind of clear things up. That was great, by the way. Thank you. Mm-hmm. When you do start kind of, if you're kind of in that higher body fat percentage range and you're starting to lose body fat, you know, it's not going to go directly to the abs first. You're going to start seeing changes usually in the face first. Mm-hmm. Then after that, you're going to start seeing changes in the shoulders. And then the abs are, unfortunately for you, is going to be the last thing to come.
Yeah.
But that is a sign that you're on the right track. So if you see that your face is starting to get leaner and your shoulders are getting leaner, you start getting more definition, just know that you're on the right track.
Yeah, unfortunately, and we'll talk about this, I'm sure, more in a second. You cannot decide where you lose fat from. If we could, we probably would be rich and famous right now. But
be very rich,
yeah.
And very famous.
But unfortunately, we can't decide that. It just kind of, you know, genetically or what, you know, however your body is, where you hold fat is kind of where you're going to start to lose fat first. At least that's kind of what I've seen in the past. And everybody holds fat differently. You know, for myself personally, I find I hold most of my fat in my lower abdomen region and then in my hips and legs. My focus for years and years now has been always lots of legs. And I'm trying to do a lot of lower ab exercises because I find my upper abs usually show much easier.
Mm-hmm.
Matt's holds his fat in his lower back.
My love handles.
Yes.
Let's use the scientific term, please.
The love handles, the lower back. And actually,
I have a name for them.
What?
I'm not going to share it on here.
Oh, okay.
It's inappropriate.
a lot of men actually do hold their fat, though, in their lower back, other than like their front belly.
Yeah.
Definitely lower back is common in men. I would say least common in women. Women actually have it more in their upper back.
It's very like ham steak like almost.
Yeah, it's just like that gross, thick, like
the spare tire
bottom layer. Yeah,
it's a spare tire tube. Is what it is. Yeah, that's what it is.
All right, so that's
for lack of a better description,
where people will hold their fat first and mostly.
Yeah, I agree with you. Let's kind of dig into the role of cardio in abs, because I think a lot of people think that they need more cardio when it comes to body fat percentage loss.
Yeah, cardio is great. Like, we all know cardio is going to burn calories and whatnot. But again, what we talked about earlier was how, you need muscle mass to start to protrude, right? There's the thing, everybody knows this, it's called skinny fat. You don't want to be skinny fat. Like, yes, you're lean, but you have no muscle mass. So you just kind of just look like a blob. And everybody wants, you know, that tone or definition look. And that's going to come from putting on muscle mass. And that's just pretty much how it is. And, you know, your body composition, you have to think of it as like constantly moving. And the more muscle mass you have protruding out and the least body fat percent or the least body fat mass you have, that's how you get that visible lines and definitions on your arms and abs and legs and all those things.
And don't get me wrong, we're not saying that cardio doesn't work for revealing abs, but I think the main misconception is that people think they only need to do 20 to 60 minutes of cardio. When really you need to get 60 to 90, like 60 minutes is like you're barely scratching the surface. Now, if we look at it scientifically, so I'm going to get kind of sciencey here. Is that okay?
Yeah. Okay. You should.
Okay. So basically what we have seen through research is that usually you're going to be in a glycolytic state for the majority of your time training, especially if you do CrossFit, which means that you're going to be using food as fuel, or you're going to be using carbohydrate as fuel for the majority of your training. Mm-hmm. Now, the thing is that as your glycogen starts depleting, that's when you start tapping into fat stores and oxygen for oxidating fat as a fuel source for your fitness. Now, the problem is, though, is that if you, you know, are in a glycolytic state for a short amount of time, like, you know, 15, 20 minutes, even up to 60 minutes sometimes, that you're not tapping into those fat stores yet, specifically because you're using carbohydrate as fuel. So when you get in that 90 minute range or plus, hence why we see endurance runners or marathon runners with super low body fat percentages. Well, I mean, partially because they're required to be lighter, but also it's pretty easy for them to keep body fat off of because they go for so long that they utilize fat as a fuel source.
Yeah.
Because you have to look at fat as something that burns very slow and steady. And then, you know, carbohydrate burns very hot and short bursts. Yes. So that is what's great about CrossFit, is because you can deplete that very quickly. But the problem is, if you have a high body fat percentage, you have to go way longer.
You go long,
longer than you think. And believe me, I know, because I've trained for this. And when I was doing my CrossFit games or my regionals training, I would do 90 minute plus workouts and bodybuilding on top of that. I did notice that was when I was at my leanest.
Your leanest. Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's such a, what you should take away from what Matt just said is that, like, if you have a high body fat percentage, you need to do a lot longer, steady state.
Need volume.
Fitness. Yeah, you need volume. You don't need short bursts. I mean, it's great. That's fun.
It's it does work, but you need more.
You need more, like, just more, especially if you're looking to lose, you know, 10 plus percent, like 10 plus percent, you're going to need to put in a lot of time and you can't put in a lot of intense time, but what you can do is put in a lot of slow, steady state time. And so doing, you know, lifting on top of just long endurance duration movement.
Yeah. Yeah. And muscle mass plays a huge role in this as well, because we said this on the last podcast, but I'll just repeat myself, is that on average, you will burn about 6 calories per pound of muscle. So the more muscle you have, you know, the more, you know,
you're gonna
calories
just burn,
you're going to burn just doing nothing. Okay. Now you can only, you only burn an average of 2 calories per pound of body fat. So the more you can just flip flop that or just work on, that's why with, I'm working with anyone, I mainly focus on muscle gain first, even if, you know, cause everyone wants a tone. Everyone, like, I've never had someone tell me they don't want a tone. Yeah. So I'm like, we got to build muscle then. And then, so where we're building muscle, I'm like, the great side effect of this is that you're going to get, you're going to hopefully see body fat percentage loss along with this, because we're just, we're working on a higher caloric burn and also we're working on the hypertrophy.
Yeah.
So that way it will reveal the muscles underneath.
For sure. And we have to remember, like, this is building muscle, doing bodybuilding kind of stuff. That's like the fun side of fitness. And because people have to go for such a long duration, would you rather run for 90 plus minutes as your exercise?
Hell no.
I don't, I'd say one absolutely in a not. Billion or okay, maybe one in a thousand.
I would rather eat glass than run for 90 minutes.
Are going to pick that. So if I gave you the option of either A, you do 90 minutes of running 3 times a week, or you do 90 minutes of slow, steady state muscle building and we'll just keep you moving for that whole entire time. I mean, most people are going to probably pick that.
Yeah.
But again, I think the biggest misconception is how much time is needed to do this in order to get the results as fast as people want it, which is Amazon Prime Time.
That's a great way to put it. That's a great way to put it. I think we covered everything there. You ready to move on to the next one?
Yeah.
That was really good. Amazon Prime. That's awesome. If only we could. The six-pack diet. Let's talk about nutrition.
So I don't like saying diet. Nobody should be on a diet. What you should get to, what everyone's goal should be, is to be able to just eat healthy, and that's how you eat. It's not called a diet anymore. It's just your what you do. And that's kind of what I was thinking about today when I was making us lunch, and I was making us, you know, ground turkey and eggs and a little bit of avocado. And that's kind of like a staple that we have. And it's obviously, if you've heard what I just said, there is no real carbohydrates in it at all. It's very low carb.
It's actually delicious.
It is. And it's pretty low fat. I mean, it's ground turkey in it. And I do add avocado, I guess, to it. So that makes it, and some butter for the eggs. So that makes it a little bit more fatty. But otherwise, I mean, it's just very lean. I want to be lean, and so I eat very lean. I mean, that's just kind of how we started thinking in the last few years, and I think it's really worked well for us. It's made things more simple, and I don't ever really think about, like, as far as what diet are we on. We eat healthy and constantly. And I think once people kind of get to that point, life becomes a lot easier for you,
especially it's sustainable.
Exactly. And that's kind of what you should be looking at going forward, is what can I sustain? Not what's just going to get me to the result I want. Well, what happens when you get there? Are you going to go back to your original eating, or are you then going to go to the next diet? Why can't we just do something that we can do for the rest of our lives? Something that I can do, and something that, like, my 75-year-old dad can do as well.
Yeah, exactly. That's a great point, because, you know, people come to me all the time and they ask me about, you know, should I do keto? Should I do paleo? Paleo is really old though. But should I do this next fat diet? And I say, well, are you planning on sustaining this for the rest of your life? And they go, no. I'm like, okay, well then don't do it.
Don't do that. Yeah.
Because it's not worth it. Because the problem is you probably will see pretty good results.
Yeah.
But the problem is, as soon as you get off of it, then what happens? What happens with everybody who goes off their diet?
They go right back to eating exactly.
Everyone gets fat again.
Yeah. They go back
to put it nicely,
doing exactly what they were doing beforehand that got them to that point in the first place, which makes absolutely no sense when you say it out loud, but it happens all the time.
Yeah, because people think that people treat fitness and nutrition like there's some sort of an end date attached to it.
Yes, there is no end date.
And there is none. So it's better to do what's sustainable, and you can still enjoy yourself by doing something sustainable, especially once you get into a rhythm. You can actually start enjoying yourself every day. You can have 100%. Something that you like, and you really, that is very quote unquote bad.
Yeah.
Every single day. You can have dessert every day.
And we do. Like, anybody listening to this right now, I'll be 100% honest. Matt and I have dessert every single night.
Never skip dessert. We never skip dessert.
Like, I have a huge sweet tooth. He actually doesn't as much as I do, but we do have a sweet every night.
That's why I have the lower abs.
That's why mine aren't super defined. No, and
I can say
and
no.
Also, I just want to put it out there. I'm totally okay with it. I am really happy with, like, how I look, and knowing that, like, I can still enjoy what I eat. And it's because the rest, like, I would say 90% again of my life, or our life, is very routine, very strategic as far as what we eat, when we eat it, because I want that 10% of time I want to enjoy it. I don't want to feel guilty or question what I'm doing. It's just, it's a part of my life, and I really enjoy how we eat right now.
Yeah, yeah. And just for context, everybody, I will fill much larger than one serving of Frosted Mini Wheats or Captain Crunch, or
we haven't actually had Frosted cereal Flakes. In a really long time.
We haven't had cereals in a while, but I will fill much larger than one cup into a bowl, and I will dump cereal into that, and I will chow down on that almost every night.
Yeah.
So
it can be done. Like,
it can definitely,
you know,
be done.
Like, I think a healthy balance is necessary mentally, physically, and, you know, also with nutrition.
Yeah. And before we move on, let's kind of briefly cover some more scientific stuff. So let's talk about, like, understanding a caloric deficit, the role of protein in muscle maintenance, and also fats and carbs. Let's start with a caloric deficit. So about what, 500 calories?
Yes.
Deficit.
You should, yeah. If you want the sciencey side of it is if you want to lose 1 pound a week, you should be at a 500, I would say 300 to 500 calorie deficit a day, which comes out to about 3,500 calories a week, which is equal to 1 pound. So if you want to, if you're in it to lose a pound a week, which is a healthy weight loss, by the way, like people who are trying to lose 5 pounds a week is just, that's just unheard of and also very unhealthy, in my opinion. It's not sustainable. So 1 pound a week is about 3,500 calories deficit.
Yeah, perfect. And let's go over the role of protein in maintaining muscle during this time. Because when you are in a calorie deficit, the chances of you losing muscle mass is very high, and we don't want that. So you have to make sure you're eating enough protein. And mm-hmm. It's very easy for us to undereat on protein almost every day.
Oh my gosh, all the time. Yeah. You know, everybody, the standard out there is just aim for about 1 gram per pound of body weight, yeah. Right? If you want to be 150 pounds, then eat 150 grams of protein. Just keep it really simple. I've seen a lot of different research studies lately that's saying, oh, it's actually 0.8. Oh, it's actually 1.2. And
I actually disagree with that just from my personal experience.
That it's one gram.
I would even argue it's higher.
It's probably higher. Well, but
this is just personal.
Personal argument is that you do have already a lot of muscle mass. So would you need more than 1 gram per pound? Probably, because you have a lot of muscle mass.
Yeah.
Oh, and just putting it out there, a goal that I usually give people is that you want to be half muscle. So again, if you weigh 150 pounds, I think a good goal would be to try to be half muscle. So it's about 70, 75 pounds of muscle mass. I actually just accomplished that within the last year. And it was really hard to do. I was fluctuating between 70 and 74 pounds of muscle mass for a long time. And it was hard for me to finally get over that 75 marker because I weigh 150 pounds. Mm. And so, you know, that's just like a general goal. I think people should kind of like put it out there and try to attain.
Yeah. And I don't have the citation in front of me, but there is a study that came out recently that said that that the 0.6, 0.7 is drastically underestimated.
Yeah.
And it's old. I mean, all that is old research too. So now we're getting more research out on protein relative to muscle mass. And actually, you know, we also have the argument, oh, it's bad for your kidneys. There's no evidence to really back that up. It also depends on the quality of the protein as well.
Yes. So quality matters.
So what they said is that it's actually that for some people, I mean, there's always exception to the rule, right? Some people can eat 0.6 and be
totally fine.
And other people need to eat more. So, mm-hmm. But they have shown that, you know, that it is for the majority of the population that 0.6 to 0.7 is not nearly enough protein intake.
Yeah. I mean, I 100% agree with that. I think it should be 1 gram per pound or more.
Okay. Let's briefly cover fats and carbs and their role in fat loss.
Definitely low carb. The biggest thing I see is people are eating a lot of carbohydrates, and they're not active enough to be eating that much carbohydrates.
That's true.
Like, you have to be very active in order to because like you said, you know, to be in a glycolytic state, you have to burn, and then you're going to burn carbs first before you even burn fats. So why are you going to fill up on carbs if that's the first thing you're going to burn? You want to burn fat. So eat less carbs, start that burning process of fats earlier. And then that way you're in more of a fat loss kind of deficit there.
Yeah. That's the whole reason behind why like the Atkins diet actually was very effective back in what, the 90s or early 2000s.
Yeah. It's because they cut out carbs.
Same thing with the zone diet.
Foods.
So I actually have done the zone diet. And what I liked about the zone diet was that I didn't realize how imbalanced my meals actually were.
Yeah.
Because
drastically.
Yeah. Cause you basically the whole concept is you eat in certain blocks. So you eat like 4 blocks of protein and then 3 blocks of carbs, 3 blocks of fat. And I realized how much carbs I would eat.
Mm-hmm.
So technically, even though I wasn't on quote unquote a low carb diet, but the percentage range for the zone diet was essentially 40, 30, 30.
Yeah.
So 40% protein, 30% carbs, 30% fat.
Mm-hmm.
And that's pretty much how I eat now.
Yeah.
I eyeball it, but let's be real.
Mm-hmm.
And what I found was, yeah, I really overate. Like, cause I remember being like,
yeah,
like I couldn't believe that what I was eating before.
Yeah.
You know,
the biggest thing is you tell somebody to start eating low carb and more protein. And the first thing they say, well, what am I supposed to eat then? So it proves how drastic people's conception of food is, that they mm-hmm. see carbohydrates as primary source food number one. and protein and fat, honestly, as like the tail end, like, oh, I don't usually eat that stuff, when in reality it needs to be flip-flopped.
Yeah.
And when people tell me, like, when I tell them their macros and how much they should be eating, when I tell them the carbohydrate number, they're like, are you sure? Like, you know, like 70 grams or whatever. And I'm like, yes, trust me. Like, I am way more active than you, and I don't really eat like 100 grams of carbs, maybe a little bit more than that, 100 to 150 grams of carbs. And I'm really active. I'm on my feet from 4 a.m. to 8 p.m. almost every single day, coaching and training other people. And people want to tell me that they were told to eat, you know, 150 grams of carbs. And I'm like, well, that's why you're not losing any weight. That's why you're not losing any fat. Is you're just too, you don't need any of that. Your body can burn fat and as the fuel source first if you kind of train it into that system. And it takes some time and getting used to. You go through that phase of feeling really lethargic.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you're so used to getting energy from carbs.
Mm-hmm. You're just shifting your energy system, essentially.
Yeah, exactly. And then you come out on the tail end of like week one, almost into week two, and you start burning fats as your fuel source, and your body starts to feel better.
Yeah.
And then you lose the taste overall for carbs and sugars and all those things. And then before you know it, a year passes, and this is how you are.
Yeah, I think people tend to avoid fat like it's the plague for some reason.
Yeah.
And we're not telling you guys not to eat carbs. We're not telling you guys not to eat fat. Basically, you just don't want to eat too many calories from those macronutrients. Because especially with healthy fats, like, I mean, that helps with hormone regulation, that helps with testosterone
your
production,
brain function,
muscle
energy,
growth, and just overall fat distribution to begin with.
Yes.
So, I mean, all these macronutrients have roles. Like carbohydrates, you do still, we're not 100%. Telling you not to eat carbs, because you need carbs for brain
fuel,
health,
yeah,
as well too.
And mood.
And mood and insulin regulation.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just a matter of that. We just
balance.
For the majority of people that we see, we just see them overeating on the wrong macronutrients.
Yes, 100%. I see it all the time.
All right. So would you have any strategies for balancing some of these? Like, for someone who's like a complete beginner, like, where would you start them at?
Writing it down and tracking your food. I mean, if you cannot write down what you ate, then you don't take this serious enough and you don't deserve results. Like, that's just the bottom line. People who want results, if you want something, you're going to put in the effort to get it, right?
Right.
So if you're going to tell me you really want abs, you really want to be 20% by whatever it is, well, then prove it. Like, show me the paperwork.
Yeah.
Show me the proof that you are putting in the time and you're not getting results, because people complain that they're not getting results, but then they have nothing to back it up.
Yeah. You need a stack of
proof.
You
need facts. Like, oh, do you work out every day? Oh, I think so. I work out a lot. Well, what's a lot? Because then when I show them like their attendance in class, and I'm like, well, you only came 9 times last month. And they're like, oh, really? I'm like, yeah. So how can you expect A+ results when you're getting effort?
Well, yeah. How can you expect 100% results when you're putting in 25% of the effort?
Yeah.
That's another way to put it.
Exactly. It's just, you have to be able to prove what you're saying you're doing.
Yeah. I like what you said there. That reminds me of something that happened to me the other day. I have another consult story that I'm going to tell everyone. I know I have a lot of these, but I do talk to a lot of people. and almost everyone says they're an 8 or a 9 or a 10. I always ask them, on a scale of 1 to 10, how serious are you?
Yeah.
And that's one of my favorite questions, because I want to see their commitment level. And, you know, very rarely do I ever get anything a 7 or below.
Mm-hmm.
And then even when I ask them, oh, like, you know, what makes you say a 7? And usually they make up some story about, oh, I still like to, you know, eat whatever I want on the weekends. Or I don't want to work out that hard. I'm like,
yeah.
That, I mean, that's totally fair. Like,
yeah,
you're being honest with me, and
that's
like
fine.
That. But when it comes to people who give me a 10 out of 10, and then when it comes time to actually put in the work and I map everything out for them, what this is going to look like, what it's going to take to actually lose 20 pounds in their time frame, which is usually anywhere. It's usually anywhere between 6 to 12 weeks, which is, you know, 12 weeks being realistic, 6 being very intense. And I always, you know, tell them, I'm like, well, it takes zero effort to say that you're committed to something, and all the effort in the world to actually demonstrate that you are committed.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and I look at them and I go, words mean nothing.
Yeah.
Behavior is king. So are you going to show me? and I really want, and I look at them and I really want them to say, and then nine times out of 10, they say yes. And I'm like, okay, let's do it. But it works because I'm like, you got to show me.
Yeah. Like,
words
you have
mean,
to prove
words
it.
Mean nothing.
I really do. And I think everybody understands that over time, hopefully, at least they begin to understand it.
And guess what? They got results.
That's great.
Because I just remind them. I just look at them because they remember that. Because it just embeds into their memory. It does. It bends into them because I look at them and I go, you're going to show me? And they go, I'm going to show you. And so they show up and they do it. And it's great because part of my job is to be a motivator.
Yeah.
I'm not here just to train you. I'm here to keep you motivated. And, you know, that's part of what you're paying me to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to make sure that I do it, even if it may sting a little bit. All right, moving on. So I kind of like how we talk. We're kind of on the subject of tracking. Let's talk about just kind of like, what are some like easy ways for people to track if they're seeing progress?
To track, definitely writing it down. I mean, get a journal. I know that sounds really old school, but I find people get the best results when they physically have to write it, take the time to write it. It's one thing to do it on your phone, in an app. Like, that becomes very mindless. I mean, we all know that we have, like, that system where you go on your phone, you go on Instagram, Facebook, email, calendar. And you have, like, this, you know, brainless kind of routine. And so if you have to physically take out a journal or something and have to, like, write it down, that makes a world of a difference. So I'd say really try to track by just writing it down on a piece of paper or something.
Okay.
Something visible that you can see.
Yeah. And I would say avoid just looking at only the scale. It doesn't tell you the whole picture because it could be water weight. It could be muscle mass that you're losing. Yeah. And the weight means really nothing. It's just like, it's the equivalent of just saying like, oh, I'm healthy. Like, well, how do you know?
Yeah.
Like, the weight doesn't tell the whole stale, the whole story. And I think a visual diary is something that people can kind of start with because then you're not really attached to, it's one of the easiest things to do. So just take a picture of yourself every day or every week.
Yeah.
And you kind of see your progress from there. Because, I mean, if you look better, regardless of what the scale says, if you look better and you feel better,
yeah,
then who cares?
Exactly.
Right.
Like, I think people don't take enough pictures. You're right. That's a really good point.
Pictures, I think, is a really good one. You don't have to share with anyone.
Exactly. You don't have to show anybody. Like, who are you? Like, why are people so shameful about that? Like, just take the picture and delete it if you really don't want it on your phone. But also, it's just for you and it's for you to see. And I wish I did more, you know, at least 6 years ago or so. But, and recently I've just been kind of increasing that and I do see a difference and that kind of keeps me accountable and motivated.
Yeah. And I think waist measurements are good. If you don't have like an in-body scanner like we do, you can definitely do waist measurements. That would help.
Yeah.
And I mean, ultimately the best metric to track really is just overall body fat percentage. And that's really hard because you can either use calipers, you can use DEXA scan, you can do dung tank, you can do in-body scan.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, all four of those can be inaccurate because with the calipers, it's like, if you don't pinch it right, you're not going to get an accurate measurement. Also, in-body scan is just using electrical signals, so it can be wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And we're very transparent about that because we have one.
Yep.
Same thing with the dunk tank. If you don't blow out all the air.
Yep.
And even then, you're still going to have air.
Yes.
It could measure it wrong. And DEXA scan, same thing. So, I mean, there really is no true accurate measurement. So the best way to track it is really just to look at trends in whichever you choose to do.
Yeah.
So everyone, Caitlin has to go. She has to go pick up the kids. But I'm going to wrap things up with supplements solo. So
awesome. Well, it was great being on the podcast with you. And I really hope people will come in and talk to us about nutrition and body fat.
Awesome. Thanks so much for coming. Thanks. And I'll do the supplements by myself.
Great. Sounds good.
All right. I love supplements. All right, everybody. So I'm going to be rocking solo because Caitlin had to take off to pick up the kids. Hashtag parent goals. Let's see. Where are we at? Let me pull up my notes. This is the last section that we're going to be talking about. We're going to be talking about essential supplements for abs and an introduction to supplements. Now, we've already covered a lot of these supplements. So if you have already listened to maybe one of our other supplement podcast, feel free to skip this section because it's going to be pretty boring for you. But if you are a first-time listener or you just need a reminder, we're going to dive right into it. So first off, there are a lot of supplements out there, especially fat, quote unquote, fat burning supplements. And you definitely want to avoid those. It's a lot of marketing, just so you know. There really is nothing that can specifically torch fat. It's usually just loaded with caffeine or other stimulants, and just to make you pretty much like a crack addict. So that way you move around more and it increases your non-exercise thermogenesis, which isn't necessarily a good thing. And it can increase your heart rate. It can make you feel uncomfortable. And overall, for long-term health, it's probably not the best thing. And believe me, I know, because I've tried it. We're going to go into protein powder first. Now, this is really helpful, especially when you're we mentioned earlier that it's pretty tough to actually hit your protein goals, and protein powder is a great way to make sure that you're intaking enough protein, or if you're in a pinch. So for example, a lot of times in the morning, like I, you know, I have kids, and so I'm getting all three kids ready for school by myself. I usually don't always have time to eat. Actually, I never have time to eat. So I usually get a protein shake in me right away, because that really actually helps specifically just how I feel overall and my brain function. So it's a great way to start off your day if you're in a pinch, is definitely get a protein shake in you right away. And there's a lot of different types of protein. So we have whey, there's casein, soy, pea protein. And which one best for you? Well, first off, whey is probably the best for post-workout and just overall absorption. Now, if you have a hard time with absorption, hydrolyzed or isolate are probably your best options. And just to, you don't have to get anything super brand namey or anything expensive. Just get something off Amazon that tastes good and that you can actually sustain. Now, when it comes to casein protein, this is actually convenient, especially if you know you're going to have a lot of time between meals. Casein is just a slower digesting protein. And unfortunately, it doesn't taste great, but it definitely works. So casein is definitely great to use during the day between meals if you know you're going to be going a long time between meals. Or I have used casein. I don't do this right now, but I have used casein before bed, because then I'm getting, you know, the protein in me at night. And, you know, I hit my protein goals as well. So incorporating it into your lifestyles, you don't want to rely on protein shakes. I would definitely use them as fillers. So either in the morning, if you're strapped for time, or if you're just looking to, like I said, between long meals or at night. So that's probably the best way to fit it in. Creatine is your next best option. So creatine monohydrate, there's a lot of science behind it. And you really only need 5 grams a day. That a lot of people or labels will even tell you to load it. That is just a tactic for you to get through your supplement faster. So guess what? You have to go back to the store and buy more. Creatine monohydrate is also very cheap. So you don't need anything like creatine or any other freaking crazy names that are out there. Just stick with monohydrate, get it off Amazon, or just go to a local supplement shop. Very easy to find, very cheap. And phosphate creatine, it stores in the muscle. You can actually use it for energy production during a workout. So there's actually an energy system called the creatine phosphate system. And you'll use this, and you can actually train the system specifically by doing touch and go, like high intensity exercises. Like for example, a good example, we do this at our gym, is like for an EMOM of 15 minutes or 12 minutes of 3 touch and go power cleans. You're actually training your creatine phosphate system. And then the system, the whole point of that is that when you train that system, is that the creatine phosphate system will actually recharge with about 50 to 60% within about 30 seconds. So you're actually depleting that system and letting it recharge on the minute. So you're actually training it to have more power over longer periods of time. So that's a fun fact for you. And by supplementing with creatine, you'll be able to sustain that longer or be more powerful with that. And it really, if you're eating enough red meat, you may not need to supplement with creatine. But I always err on the side of caution, and I personally like to supplement with it. Just 5 grams per day, no loading, and that's it. And it will definitely help with muscle volume. It'll also help with cognitive function, which is very nice. And I'm not going to get into too many details of that, because I've already done that before. But if you have any questions, feel free to ask me in person about creatine. Caffeine actually does help. That's our next one. So it does boost fat. Boost some fat burning. There is some research to show that, and boost focus, and mainly just through increased focus, endurance, and potentially some fat oxidation, but do not rely on that. You rely on activity and nutrition first. And that can definitely aid in revealing abs. also the caffeine just helps with just overall motivation to actually work out and help you actually kind of get revved up for that workout. So I am very pro caffeine. I like caffeine almost every day. So optimal dosages are going to be on a per basis on your body weight and how you respond to it. I'm not going to give any recommendations here. So definitely please obviously start off low and gradually increase over time because you don't want to be too jittery. And then finally, just kind of a balanced approach to supplementation. You don't want to rely on supplements. We've already said this before, but you don't want to ever want to rely on them. There are supplements, hence the name supplements. So definitely focus on protein intake first, exercise, sleep, stress reduction, exercise selection, all those things, making sure you're working out 4 to 6 times a week minimum. And then we can worry about supplements. And I think that covers everything. Say thanks so much for sticking with me solo. So I really appreciate you guys listening. And yeah, that wraps things up. So thank you so much for listening. If this was helpful, please leave us a 5-star review so we know to make more content just like this. Please follow us on social media at Red Wolf CrossFit and DM your content suggestions there. We would love to talk about anything you guys want to hear. Until next time, good luck. Have fun. Nailed it.